He was the most famous feline in all of Zimbabwe. Cecil the Lion would lure tourists from around the world. But Cecil was killed earlier this month after hunters used an animal carcass as a lure.
My name is Dr. Walt Palmer. I started River Bluff Dental 17 years ago.
The accused poacher, an American dentist with a love of trophy hunting. He's issued a statement saying, "I had no idea that the lion I took was a known local favourite."
That was from a news report that I'm sure most of you heard about the killing of Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe a few months ago by an American dentist on a hunting holiday. The worldwide condemnation was swift and fierce, but this awful episode raises some interesting questions about why certain animals provoke such strong reactions and how we think about and interact with animals when we're being tourists. Kevin Markwell is an associate professor at the School of Business and Tourism at Southern Cross University, and he recently edited a book called Animals and Tourism, Understanding Diverse Relationships. And he joins us now from our Lismore studio to unpack the ethics of tourism and those complicated relationships that we have with animals. Welcome to Blueprint for Living, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Now, I guess you could call the killing of Cecil the Lion an example of kill tourism. I suspect that's not a technical term. But tell us about some of the less horrible ways in which animals are involved in tourism.
Well, if I can just start with Cecil for just a minute. I think Cecil highlights the ambiguities and inconsistencies that characterise our relationships with animals, and that's fascinated me for many years. And I think tourism is an ideal domain, if you like, to explore those in more detail. In the case of Cecil, yeah, he's the end result of hunting tourism. Hunting tourism is an important component of many destinations, but it involves ultimately the death of living animals. And I think when those animals are photographed in poses where the hunters are clearly proud of themselves, and often there's a lack of respect for those animals implicit in those photos, and then they end up in someone's Facebook feed, people react very, very strongly to that. But many of those people who reacted so strongly, I suspect, went home and ate some kind of animal for dinner that night. So our relationships are so complex and ambiguous and inconsistent in many ways. And tourism, as I said, is a fantastic vehicle to explore those. Animals have been used as tourist attractions for centuries in all kinds of ways. They're still a very important driver for tourism at many destinations. We imagine when we're travelling that we'll encounter all kinds of strange and unusual animals, or that we'll somehow get close to those animals. And tourism provides opportunities for getting close in some way to animals which we ordinarily wouldn't.
Yeah, so it's not all as brutal as what happened to Cecil the Lion. You know, I, for example, vividly remember being so excited about visiting Mission Beach in Queensland, mm-hmm. and getting to see a cassowary live,
yeah, that's
out,
right.
out in the bush.
Mm. And when you have that experience, for many people that can be quite a profound experience that stays with them for maybe the rest of their lives, or certainly for a long time. And people draw on that experience, and from a conservation perspective, we hope that positive experience will mean that people are more interested in this case the cassowary, and be concerned about its future, and maybe actively participate in some way to donate money or something, or write to a politician to say, hey, look, cassowaries are an endangered species, they're having a hard time, we really need to do something to protect them.
So in some ways, our love of animals and our animal tourism can turn the fortunes around, can't it? Whale watching, for example.
Certainly. Whales are a great example where, up until literally a few decades in Australia and other countries, they were seen as a resource to be killed, hunted, and then converted into a variety of products. Once whales were protected, they have become, they're still an economically important a resource, if you like, but that resource is a living one that remains alive. The whale watch industry provides opportunities for people to go and have a reasonably close encounter with whales. It's, when people see whales out in the ocean, it's a wonderful experience. They're a majestic animal, and that seeing them in real life can have a significant impact on people and their empathy empathy and respect for those animals.
But Kevin, even when we're engaged in what you could see as sort of pro-animal tourism, sometimes we love them too much, don't we? I mean, people who get too close to whales on whale-watching trips.
Absolutely. And often we don't realise we're loving them too much either. So there's a lot of ignorance in how we interact with animals. And sometimes, you know, we the science still isn't very clear either. There's research going on now which suggests that some species of whales in some locations respond to the arrival of a whale-watching vessel in the same way that they were trying to avoid a predator. So they actually go into a kind of a predator avoidance behaviour and might sink lower or swim away or whatever else they might do. In other examples of research, some people have been looking at the interaction between tourists and monkeys in certain locations, and the behaviour of monkeys is such that if this particular monkey scratches itself quite a lot, then that's an indication that it's stressed in some way. They also do an analysis of their droppings to measure the quantity of stress hormone in their droppings, and they compare monkeys that have interaction or observed by tourists with monkeys who don't have any tourist interaction at all. And they do find that, in fact, behaviourally, those monkeys seem to be more stressed, and when tourists get very, very close and throw food at them, etc., their level of stress hormones increases as well. So there are ways around that, of course, and so by reducing the proximity between tourists and the animals and educating tourists so that they behave in ways that actually don't stress the animals. But of course, in many primates, looking face to face and looking and maintaining eye contact, which is of course what tourists want to do, they want to see an animal looking back at them, that actually causes stress to primates.
Well, and you can see, you know, a really nasty example of this kind of stress in some zoo animals when you see those kind of stereotypy behaviours,
That's right.
Animals walking up and down and up and down the perimeter of their cage.
Absolutely, and certainly there's been, you know, radical redesign of animal enclosures over the last few years, and we talk about immersive exhibits and exhibits which are very naturalistic, and you know, the many species of animals seem to exist quite well in captivity today. But there are still certain species, and in my book, some authors from the States who had worked at SeaWorld in Florida give quite a graphic account of what they see to be inherent cruelty in keeping an animal that is so large and which is so social in very, very small enclosures. And so there's a whole raft of problems that those animals experience in terms of getting sunburn, in terms of even getting mosquito bitten, which, by and large, the average visitor to a facility like that isn't aware of. So you know, as long as the animal looks like it's been cared for, and then most visitors are quite happy to go along. And again, another chapter in the book looks at the plight of elephants in Thailand, and people can go and watch elephants, you know, performing all kinds of un-elephant-like things, like throwing darts at balloons and standing on their two legs or whatever it is. And visitors don't realise that in order to get an animal like an elephant to be so compliant, there's an awful lot of what we would regard as cruelty to enforced on that elephant.
People do love an elephant, right? Kevin Markwell, we also sometimes will eat different kinds of animals when we're on holidays to what we would normally eat in our daily lives, won't we?
That's right. One of the characteristics of our experience of going away and leaving our homes is that we often leave our normal conventions that kind of guide us on our day-to-day basis, and we'll do things which we wouldn't ordinarily do, or we might drink a little bit more, or we might take risks, and of course adventure tourism is predicated on that desire to do things out of the ordinary. And part of that for some people is to enjoy the local food in some way, and you know, provided that the animals that are being eaten are hunted in an ethical and sustainable way, you know, there's really not much that you can argue
that's
against
the
that
trick,
unless
though,
you have
it?
A philosophical view of not eating animals.
Yeah.
But yeah, we as tourists we often don't, usually don't have any indication whether the animals, you know, whether the chicken's been farmed in a free range situation or whether the animal itself itself may be even locally endangered. And a great example of that was I was in Vanuatu a few weeks ago, and there's a very large crab called the coconut crab, which unfortunately for it happens to be quite delicious, and it's been subjected to hunting pressure for quite some time to the extent that it's now quite endangered. Those crabs shouldn't really be eaten anymore, but there's still a demand that the tourists are creating for that crab on restaurant menus. And so I saw a number of restaurants that were advertising, yes, we sell coconut crab here. So another example, I guess, people who go to Cambodia or Vietnam, they might see snake wine and see that as, you know, part of the local culture. And, well, you know, it's a must-do experience if you're in Vietnam, you must try the snake wine. And whilst, you know, tourists will be told that, well, the snakes come from snake farms and often that's enough for many tourists, those snake farms usually aren't actually breeding the snakes. The snakes are being hunted out of the wild and then just that reside in this holding facility for a while until they're killed. And so now the populations of rats in some rural areas are increasing because the number of snakes that should be eating them are gone. And so that tourist market is actually increasing the demand for something which might be locally authentic and part of the culture, but when you get, you know, large numbers of tourists who are now also wanting to partake in that, then there's going to be a problem with the local species.
So briefly, Kevin, I suppose the question here is what responsibility individual tourists have when it comes to, I guess, interacting ethically with animals on their holidays.
And that issue of ethics is a strong theme throughout my book. So what is, you know, how should we treat animals in the context of tourism? What is the best, most ethical way? And individual tourists can do some research. There's some great non-government organisations that have fantastic websites like Right Tourism, and it actually provides a lot of information about what you should and shouldn't do as a tourist in relation to animals. There's, you know, many people will encounter so-called photo prop animals when they're travelling, where someone...
So the main message is do your research before
that's
you
right.
go.
That's right. And we have access to that information now through the net.
Great. Look, thanks so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Sian.
Kevin Markwell is from the School of Business and Tourism at Southern Cross University, and his book is called Animals and Tourism, Understanding Diverse Relationships. Look, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can comment on this and any other story on our website and also on our Facebook page. So do join in the conversation. We'd love to hear from you.